We'll be in Acts chapter 25 and 26. Well, we will be talking about three men tonight. And I love history, but I have to admit that there is a lot of things that involve these three men, and we won't be able to share all of it. But I hope that you get at least a little picture of these three men, the times that they lived in, and how Paul made an impact on their lives, and how Paul didn't let the times that he lived in impact his life. It's an amazing, the more that I read, the more amazed I am that just outside of the Bible, how much evidence there is for the book of Acts, and how much other historians have written about the things that happened in the book of Acts. And oftentimes, they're just a name mentioned in the book of Acts, and they keep on going, but history talks about them in great detail in other places. And it's amazing to me, some of those things. But don't forget, we're also, we had the countdown at the beginning of the service. I missed tonight's countdown, but maybe some of you got that. There's questions that go on tonight on the countdown on Wednesday night, and I'll be adding a couple other questions that are some of the things that we covered that aren't on there. But we'll pass out a little quiz on the last series of this. I'll grade that quiz, and it won't be anything difficult or hard. It'll be easy. So even some of you that struggle with quizzes, you'll be able to at least do somewhat well on it. And whoever wins, and if there's a tie, I'll draw a name, you'll get these coins. One of these coins is a real Roman coin. It needs some cleaning to it, but it's a real Roman coin, and it's 2,000 years old. The other coin is a copy, and it says copy on it, so don't try to go over to Rome and spend it, but it's a copy of a Roman coin, what different Roman coins could look like. So you get both coins if you get it. And I thought a little bit further on that. So the younger kids, they'll be able to take the quiz too, but we'll have some kind of treats for them if they do well on the quiz. So for you younger kids, you won't be able to get part in the coins because I hate for you to embarrass some of the older people and then take those coins and try to spend them at the mall or something. But you'll get a different, just a little treat or something for taking the quiz. So, and doing well on it. And also, after the last series, of course, we have tonight. Next week, we're talking about Paul's shipwreck, the big shipwreck that he was in, some of the stories around that. And then on the 2 weeks from tonight, we'll be talking about Paul's final days in prison. Some of the things that he wrote to Timothy about that I feel are very pertinent for us today, about being faithful, not quitting, not giving up, staying true to what we're supposed to do, being a good soldier, being consistent in our lives for Christ. And then 3 weeks from now, we'll be showing a video about the journey of Paul, just a concentrated thing on all the journeys and things that we've talked about tonight. But if you look here tonight, we have the map. Paul is still in the Jerusalem Caesarea area. If you don't know where those are at, I'll point those out quickly on the map. Jerusalem down here at the bottom, Caesarea here. He's in this area tonight, going to be judged tonight. And there's going to be some travels back and forth in between Jerusalem, but Paul is going to be staying in Caesarea. Some of the people will be coming from Jerusalem to accuse him. Some of the rulers that we talked about are going to visit Jerusalem. But those are the areas we're going to be at tonight. And Paul, of course, his missionary journeys are over. He has that final fourth journey, which is really his prison trip to Rome. But we'll get into that also tonight. But to try to paint the full picture, the historical picture tonight of these two chapters, we really don't have all the time that I'd like to take. But the year is about 60 A.D., 60 years after the birth of Christ. In 10 short years, Jerusalem is going to be destroyed. The temple is going to be destroyed. And where they have the Wailing Wall at today, that platform where the Dome of the Rock is built today, that's going to be basically how the temple is going to stay until now. It's going to be destroyed. It's going to be leveled. And it's going to be leveled and destroyed because there is so much unrest going on in Jerusalem at this time in chapter 25. In fact, it seems like as each year increases, there's more problems in the Judea area around Jerusalem. The Romans have to keep sending more and more soldiers. In fact, some of the Roman rulers changed the leadership there at Jerusalem several times. Even some of the high priests were murdered in the street by the Sicarii, which were Jewish zealots that would walk around killing people that they thought were either against them or against the Jewish people. And so even some of the high priests were killed. Others of the high priests were sent to prison. Some of the high priests were taken out of office and new high priests were coming in. And these men were more than just the religious leaders. They were seen also as the political leaders of the time. And it's very difficult at this time to separate the religious and the political here in Judea. They were merged into one. So when we talk about Judaism, we talk about the high priest, we're not just talking about a religion, we're also talking about a political party. And even inside that political scene, there was split into the Sadducees and the Pharisees. The Sadducees wanted to be more liberal. They wanted to adopt some Greek and Roman things. They wanted to build like Greek and Romans. They wanted to open up the temple to allow more people to come in, which would help them financially. The Pharisees wanted to go back into more of the old ways of Judaism. They were very strict with the law. They had lots and lots of rules. And in so doing, they kind of left what the law was supposed to be about, to show us our sin, and they turned it into a legalistic system of works to be able to get to heaven that way. And that's, of course, not what the Bible teaches. And the Sadducees, something else that's interesting is that the Sadducees only believed the first 5 books of the Old Testament were bearing on them. And they had their own ways of translating those books, their own ways of seeing those first 5 books, what we call the Law of Moses, whereas the Pharisees took the entire Old Testament. And so there was conflict even among in between the Pharisees and the Sadducees of the different high priests that came into being. So all those things were going on. And the Romans, as they began to change these rulers, I'll read you a paragraph here in just a minute, but these problems kept getting worse and worse. So as they would make a change, instead of the problems getting better, the problems would simply get worse. We're going to talk tonight about Agrippa, and I'll just give you this for a viewpoint. But Agrippa and his sister Bernice, this is Agrippa the II, son of Agrippa the I, and they were all related to Herod. Agrippa was one of the last Jewish kings over Judea. And Bernice, his sister, which will show up here, was married to different men throughout the Roman Empire. And interestingly enough, even though it was his direct sister from the same parents, he treated her as his wife at different times. So that's just a weird, strange thing that was going on inside the leadership there. This was the Jewish leadership that the Romans had put in charge. So there's violence, riots, these revolts, treachery, betrayal, a mix of different things going on, sin and other things that were happening there. And it really, the historical part reads almost like a soap opera that we could see on television, like Days of Our Lives, except with Jewish characters. All the backstabbing and the twists and things, you know, this person loves this person, but the next day this person is trying to kill that person, and this person, they thought he was dead in Rome, but he came back. It's just like a soap opera that we would see today. But let me read you this paragraph, and this is a history book of this time, the time of around Herod's time, but this is just one paragraph out of several chapters that read the same way. The procuratorial government, that's the government of Agrippa, lasted 22 years, from the death of Agrippa the I, his father, until the beginning of the First Revolt, close to 70 AD. It was marked by a growing deterioration in the relations between all classes of Jews and the Roman administration. The first Roman governors had replaced the detestable tyranny of Herod, which the later one succeeded, a king dear to the whole people. The Romans, moreover, were now resorting to the growing use of force and oppression. They preferred the Hellenistic elements of the mixed towns to the Jews. Extremist movements and ideologies gained increasing prevalence within Jewish society, especially among the ordinary people. Messianic, that means the hope of a Messiah, hopes grew daily, undermining the order and disturbing the safety of the villages throughout Judea and of Jerusalem itself. There is constant tension between Jews and Gentiles and the Hellenistic cities of the province. Many became impoverished and longed for social change. All these developments helped bring about the downfall of Roman administration and order in Judea. And of course, the Roman answer to that at the end was that they marched into Jerusalem, put it under siege, and eventually laid waste to the Temple Mount itself. They decided, you know, this temple has caused us enough problems. This religion has caused us enough trouble in this area. And so they simply cleaned off the entire Temple Mount, left it flat. And it stayed that way for thousands of years until eventually, a few hundred years ago, they built the Dome of the Rock. The Muslims built the Dome of the Rock on top of that foundation. So that's the background of what's going on during this time. So in 10 short years, the temple will be destroyed. All these problems are going on. So that brings us to our point. of what we must do. We must share Christ. As Paul lived in these troubling times, I'm sure you may read in the newspaper today about murders, how there are now more murders in Trinidad than there's ever been. People are worried about inflation. As the price of oil goes up and down, there's fears that the economy could crash even here in Trinidad. The price of food goes up all the time, and it's more difficult to buy food. It seems like people's incomes don't go as far as they used to. And yet, in the midst of all those things in the newspaper, all those stories, our lives aren't as bad as what Paul's life was. The times that Paul lived in were far worse, far more dangerous, and far more, as we could say, scary than what our times are. There was more possibility of change in Paul's time than there is in our time. And certainly we can look around and see, hey, you know, something could happen at any moment. There could be great change at any time. And yet even in Paul's time, there were going to be great changes that would happen all around him, and even are happening right now. And as Paul shares Jesus Christ, we're going to look at these three men that are brought into Paul's life. And God brings people likewise into our lives, and that we must share Christ with them. You know, last night that happened to us. I've never been involved with anything like that before, never had anybody ask, you know, come to us. They don't come to our church and say, hey, can you have a church service in our house? You know, what are you supposed to do? You know, sure, we can do that. I don't know if they understood what they were getting into or not. Maybe they will never ask us to come back again. I don't know. But for one thing, we had an opportunity last night. And God brings people into our lives for a specific reason. He brings people into our lives to share Christ, like we were able to last night. And in Matthew chapter 13, verse 3 through 8, and in Luke chapter 8, verse 5 through 8, and in Mark chapter 4, verses 3 through 8, there's the same parable. And it's called the parable of the sower. And I'll just read out of Mark real quick. It's about a man who sows seed into ground. Mark chapter 4, verse 3 through 8. Jesus is speaking this parable. Hearken, behold, there went out a sower to sow. That's someone back then that would take seed and throw it out on the ground that he had plowed. And it came to pass, as he sowed, some of the seed fell by the wayside, and the fowls of the air came and devoured it up. And some fell on stony ground, where it had not much earth, and immediately it sprang up, because it had no depth of earth. But when the sun was up, it was scorched, and because it had no root, it withered away. And some fell among thorns, and the thorns grew up and choked it, and it yielded no fruit. And other fell on good ground, and did yield fruit that sprang up and increased, and brought forth some 30, some 60, and some 100. There are four different kinds of soils spoken of in that parable. He talks about the wayside. That seems to be like the trail that went by the field, packed down hard in ground, that the roots, that we could never take root in that ground. The seed couldn't take root. The second type of soil was stony ground, that it will start and it will spring up, but because it can't get enough moisture and too much sun, that it will wither away. And then there's also the thorny ground, whereas you can put the seed in, it will begin to grow, but it can never get to its full potential. It can never grow and bear seed because the thorns choke it out. It absorbs too much energy. The thorns take it away. And then finally, of course, the fourth is good soil, where it grows, the seed goes in, it springs up, it grows and bears forth fruit. And I think these four types of soil are pictures of the people that God brings into our lives. And as we talk of these three men, I think these three men tonight fall into one of these types of soil. We never know what kind of soil, so to speak, that we're sowing the seed on. We don't know if that person has a stony heart, that they have a heart that's consumed with other things, a thorny heart. If their heart, it'll never take root at all, or if their heart is good soil. In fact, it's not up to us to discern what kind of heart they have. The Bible simply says it's up to us, it's our job to sow. And it's their job to allow the seed to take root. And that God is the one that brings the increase. That God is the one that allows His Spirit to work in their hearts. But it's still our job to sow. If you ever sow on stony ground and all the seed you've thrown out all withers and dies, you're still supposed to go out and sow. My grandparents, where they live in the States, they live in a farming area. And it snows in that area. And even while it's snowing in the wintertime, farmers are working on their fields. They'll plow them up. They'll pull out stones. They'll cultivate that field before they ever put soil or put seed in that soil. They have a thing that's called an aerator, which basically punches holes in the ground, allows the air to get down into the ground. They have a thing called a tiller that turns the soil over. They have a thing that chops up weeds and makes sure weeds don't get to grow before they get a chance to sow the seed. They throw out fertilizer. They even when it snows, they'll grind in the snow so the moisture will soak into the ground. It won't evaporate up. They do all those things. They water it and all those things before they ever sow seed. And I think sometimes we as people lose patience. We know that God wants us to sow seed. We know that God wants us to share Christ. And yet so often we lose patience because we don't get to see the fruit of what we've done. Probably many of those people that we saw even last night, we may not see again. Or we may never know the impact that we had on them last night. But we did what we were supposed to do. We went out there and we shared Christ with them. And that's what we're supposed to do. And that's what Paul had burned into him. He was so aggressive in sharing Christ that if he met rejection somewhere, if he came on the stony ground, so to speak, he would go on to the next place and share Christ again. And that brings us to our first man. These three men in Paul's life, he shared Christ with all of them. All of them were different. All of them happened to be authority over Paul as he was a prisoner. And each of them responded differently to Paul's response. The first one we talked about last week, and that is Felix. Felix in chapter 24, as we spoke last week in verse 25, it says, as Paul reasoned of righteousness, temperance, and judgment to come, Felix trembled and answered and said, go thy way for this time. When I have a convenient season, I will call for thee. He hoped also that money should be given him of Paul, that he might loose him. Wherefore he sent for him the oftener and communed with him. So here's Felix. We talked about how he was a corrupt ruler. He didn't rule very well. Under his administration, things got progressively worse. In fact, got to the point where they could not ever return to where they were before. Even as they adjusted to new rulers, the things that Felix did undermined future rulers. They were never able to get back the problems that Felix started. And something that's interesting here is that Felix wanted to wait for a convenient season for him. And if you could write that beside Felix's name, just write down a convenient season beside Felix's name. Do you understand that oftentimes as we share Christ with others, we run into these same kinds of people. People that want to wait. People that will say, well, not today. Maybe some other time I'll do it. Or, you know, I'm trying to take care of some things in my life. There's some problems that are going on in my life. And if I take care of them first, then after that, I'll go and I'll trust Christ. Or I'll go and I'll take care of those things. But as we read verse 27 of the end of chapter 24, that Felix loses his seat in government there in 27. And as far as we know, he never got back in contact with Paul. He never had a chance to change that convenient season into a point where he accepted Jesus Christ, that he accepted the teachings of Paul. It seems like his life was crowded with other things. We saw in verse 26 that he also wanted money from the friends of Paul, or from somehow that Paul could give him money so that he would allow him to get out of prison. And that never happened. So that he was so worried about money, he was so worried about his financial state and other things that were going on, that convenient season really in Felix's life never came. In fact, he ended up dying a tragic death at the end of his life from a sickness. And so, as far as we know, that convenient season never came into Felix's life. We talked about that a little bit next week. And it seems to me that here in Felix's life, that his life kind of mirrors that thorny ground. He had so many other things going on in his life that as a seed, the Word of God, as Paul shared Christ with him, that those other things in his life just choked out the things of the Lord. He trembled. He was worried about what Paul talked about it. But as he waited, those other things came up in his life. He never allowed those things to take root in his life. He was looking more for money in verse 26. And then in verse 27, he ended up losing his seat of government. That brings us to the next point, Festus. Festus. Now, you put beside Felix a convenient season because he wanted to wait for a convenient season. But beside Festus, put down, you're crazy, because that's what he said to Paul. He called Paul crazy. Now, Festus took the place of Felix. He took over that same seat that Felix was in. Now, look at verse chapter 25, and I'll read the first 12 verses. Now, when Festus was coming to the province after 3 days, he ascended from Caesarea to Jerusalem. Then the high priest and the chief of the Jews informed him against Paul and besought him and desired favor against him, that he would send for him to Jerusalem, lying wait in the way to kill him. But Festus answered that Paul should be kept at Caesarea, and that he himself would depart shortly thither. Let them therefore, said he, which among you are able, go down with me and accuse this man, if there be any wickedness in him. And when he had tarried among them more than 10 days, he went down into Caesarea, and the next day, sitting on the judgment seat, commanded Paul to be brought. And when he was come, the Jews which came down from Jerusalem stood round about and laid many and grievous complaints against Paul, which they could not prove. While he answered for himself, neither against the law of the Jews, nor against the temple, nor yet against Caesar have I offended anything at all. And remember, Paul was a Roman citizen. So it seems like at this time, if they could make an accusation that he had said something against Caesar, they could not so much strip Paul of his Roman citizenship, but they could be able to execute Paul outside of his Roman citizenship because he had done something treacherous against Caesar, who was in charge of the Romans. But Festus, verse 9, willing to do the Jews a pleasure, answered Paul and said, Wilt thou go up to Jerusalem, and there be judged of these things before me? Then said Paul, I stand at Caesar's judgment seat, where I ought to be judged. To the Jews have I done no wrong, as thou very well knowest. If I be an offender, or have committed anything worthy of death, I refuse not to die. But if there be none of these things, whereof these accuse me, no man may deliver me unto them, I appeal unto Caesar. Then Festus, when he had conferred with the council, answered, Hast thou appealed unto Caesar shalt thou go. It's interesting that that really was going to determine future courses, future events for Paul, because he was eventually going to go to Rome. But here Festus has a chance for his first encounter with Paul. Verse 13, we see that Agrippa and his sister Bernice are going to come into the picture. And Festus and Bernice and Agrippa are going to listen to Paul. Festus is going to explain to Agrippa what Paul was doing there, why he had come to there. And in chapter 26, Paul is going to get a chance to again testify in front of those three. And it seems like maybe even more people than that he was going to get a chance to talk to about why he was there and what the Jews had done. And it's interesting to note here that as chapter 26 starts, as Paul begins to talk about in front of Festus and Agrippa about his story, that the first thing he does is he talks about the way he used to live, how his life used to be, and then how his life was changed when Jesus Christ came into his life, and then what Jesus Christ could do for them. That's an interesting pattern for us even today. You don't have to be educated. You don't have to know all the scripture. You can simply tell people, this is what Jesus Christ has done for me. This is how Jesus Christ has changed me. This is what Jesus Christ can do for you. That's exactly what Paul did. For the sake of time, we won't read all of it, but basically Paul shares his testimony with those people. He shares it with Agrippa and Festus. And Festus, after he's talking about all these things, let's look at verse 24 of chapter 26. And as he had thus spake for himself, Paul, Festus said with a loud voice, Paul, thou art beside thyself. Much learning doth make thee mad. But he said, I'm not mad, most noble Festus, but speak forth the words of truth and soberness. Have you ever called somebody crazy and said that to their face? You know, you're crazy, you're mad. That's what Festus was calling or telling Paul. It's an insult. You know, we have a crazy guy that walks around our house by us. Maybe you have some, share that same thing. I hope it's not the same crazy guy. If he does, he walks pretty far. But the other day I heard a strange noise, and I was like, that sounds like weird music of some kind. And I looked out my window, and the crazy guy that walks around my house is playing a little flute and walking down the street, which, I mean, that's pretty normal fare for him. But as he played, he's like, doo-doo-doo, and he looks behind him. And he walks a little bit, doo-doo-doo, and looks behind him. Walks doo-doo-doo, and looks behind him. Like, what is he doing? I was like, Tammy, come here. Look at this. You know, he's a crazy guy. He does weird things. You know, does that make any sense? No. I mean, was he thinking that there were all the rats in the area were going to follow him and he's going to be the Pied Piper? It looked that way. I'm not sure. But in any case, if I were to call you, you know, you're a crazy person. You know, I'm equating you with that man who has no sense of what he's doing, with that man who doesn't understand what he's doing. He doesn't know why he's doing that. He doesn't understand what he's doing. That's what Festus called Paul. He said, you know, you're crazy. You're out of your mind. You have no sense about what you're saying. He said, you're delirious. You're drunk. You don't understand what you're doing. And I want to share with you that there are times in our lives, as we share Christ, that there are going to be people like that to say those things to us. You know, they're going to say, you know what, you're crazy. You're foolish. You know, I can't believe you believe those things. I don't believe that way. You shouldn't believe that way. You're an idiot. You're just a mad person. But I want you to understand that if someone calls that to us or says something like that to us, that that's no reason to stop sharing Christ. But we must continue to share Christ, regardless of what people say to us, regardless of what people do. And there's really a reason why Festus would say that. In these political times here, if Festus was to align himself with Paul and to agree with Paul, he was very well putting himself in harm's way. Because not only were early Christians being persecuted, but with all the tensions at Jerusalem, any type of leadership that would align themselves with the early Christians was putting themselves in harm's way. The early Christians were the outcasts, really, of the society at that time. All these political factions that were going on, the fighting, the riots, the murders that were going on, you do not want to put yourself on the side of Christians in a public sense. And some people believe that this was a very public trial, that it wasn't just Festus and Agrippa standing there, that the whole courtroom, if you can imagine, a whole room full of people listening to what Paul was saying. And so Festus, very probably conscious of his political career, he had just entered a new political phase of his life, very well could have sat there and said, you know, you're crazy, Paul, to make sure that everyone else there knew that he disliked what Paul was saying, that he wasn't lining himself up with the way Paul was. But I want you to understand that while he rejected Paul, and he rejected Paul's message, that he was also really rejecting Jesus Christ, that he was rejecting the message that Christ had to offer. And as people reject us, and as they reject the things that we say, it's not us that they're hating. It's not us that they dislike. They dislike who we stand for. They dislike the message that we share, that message of Jesus Christ. So don't take it personal. Don't say, well, I'm never going to share Christ again. Just simply go on to the next person. That's exactly what Paul did. And that brings us to our next person. Paul had done what he was supposed to do. He shared Christ. And we too, if we do what we're supposed to do, we should come to expect that some people will think we're a little bit crazy, that some people will think that we're a little bit different, that we may be out of our mind. But our job is still to share Christ. That brings us to Agrippa. And I tell you, out of these three men, this man Agrippa is the most intriguing. He came from a royal line. He was the great-grandson of Herod. His father, Agrippa the First, was a Jew. His mother was a Jew. Agrippa the First was in line with all the Jewish traditions. In fact, Agrippa the First, his father, lined himself up with all the Jewish festivals, did all those things, even went into the temple and helped with some of the traditions there at the temple. In fact, there's a story that he was handed the book of the law. And as he read the book of the law, he came to the part that no stranger should have rule over us in the Old Testament, out of some of the old minor prophets. And as he read those passages, he wept because some of his lineage was not pure, and his kingship line didn't line up with the line of Judea. And as he began to weep, some of the Jewish rabbis that were around him, they said, they patted him on the back and said, "You are no stranger to us. You are our brother." That's his father, Agrippa II. So you understand that he has a strong Jewish heritage. And as he came in, the Jews were expecting him to be like his father. They expected him to be sympathetic to the Jewish tradition, to be sympathetic to the Jewish problems that they were having with Rome. So he had a lot to stand up for. And as he walks into his kingdom is literally in turmoil. Things are going very badly. And so for him, this is just the pain what Agrippa is going to say later, for him to have anything to even do with Paul is going to put him in a bad situation. It's going to cause further problems in his life. His life was also full of sin. He was having an incestual affair with his own sister. He also had a wife and other problems in his life. All these things were going on in Agrippa's life as he runs into Paul. And as he sits there alongside Festus, Festus says, "You know, Paul, you're crazy." And it was very easy for Agrippa, sitting there beside Festus, to just join in with Festus's opinion of Paul. And yet, I've always looked at this passage and thought, man, Agrippa came so close, and yet he never did accept Christ. And surely this passage doesn't say that. It doesn't say that he did accept Christ. In fact, beside his name, I would like you to put this, "almost persuaded." Put down "almost persuaded." And that's what Agrippa says to Paul. Paul turns from Festus and turns to Agrippa in verse 26 of chapter 26. And he says this to Agrippa, "For the king knoweth of these things, before whom also I speak freely. For I am persuaded that none of these things are hidden from him. For this thing was not done in a corner. King Agrippa, believest thou the prophets? I know that thou believest." Then Agrippa said unto Paul, "Almost thou persuadest me to be a Christian." And Paul said, "I would to God that not only thou, but also all that hear me this day, are both almost and altogether such as I am, except these bonds." You know, the Bible doesn't say that Agrippa ever got saved. The Bible doesn't say he ever accepted Jesus Christ. But as I began to read some of the background that Agrippa had, some of the historical things that Agrippa was dealing with, for him to even to say to Paul, "You've almost persuaded me to be a Christian," is a strong step for Agrippa. In fact, it took Agrippa great courage to go that far, because Agrippa's kingdom, being in the turmoil that it is, it would have been a wise political move for Agrippa to line himself up with Festus and to distance himself from Paul. And yet at the end of the chapter, chapter 26, Agrippa is quoted as saying to Festus, "This man might have been set at liberty," talking of Paul, "if he had not appealed unto Caesar." You understand here, we don't know what happened to Agrippa. And I want you to understand that there are going to be people in our lives that we'll run into, people that will listen to everything that we have to say. They may soak it in. And we may never get to see what Jesus Christ does in their life. We may never get to see them ever bear fruit. But that something has happened in their hearts. Maybe it's just that we've tilled the soil. Maybe we've simply prepared them for the next person that comes along. But here in Agrippa's life, something changed in his life. Even in history, we can see that there was a change, even though history does not record that he ever became a Christian. He began to drift from his Jewish traditions. And finally, even in the revolt in AD 70, as the temple was destroyed, he backed out of helping the Jews and instead distance himself from the Jewish traditions and the Jewish religion and the temple as it was destroyed. There was something that happened there in Agrippa's life that changed as he left, I believe as he left Paul. We'll never know exactly what happened until we get to heaven. But certainly something that Paul said influenced Agrippa more than it influenced Felix, more than it influenced Festus. So somehow Agrippa, those things began to take a little bit of root. Did he change his life for Christ? We don't know. Whatever happened in Agrippa's life, we'll never find out until we go to heaven. But somehow, what Paul said had an impact on Agrippa's life. And I want you to understand, as these three men passed through Paul's life, as he shared Christ with all of them, and as all of them had a different response, we'll run into those same responses. Some people will listen, and they won't be persuaded. They won't be changed. They'll sit there and wait for a convenient season. Other people will be hardened and call us crazy and think that we're mad, think that we're insane. And other people will say, you know, I'm almost persuaded to be a Christian, and yet we'll never see them change. We won't get a chance to see any fruit out of their lives. So my question to you tonight, if you're not saved, where are you at in your life? Are you waiting for a convenient season? Are you waiting and being almost persuaded but not going? Or do you think that everything we've talked about tonight is just crazy? Maybe you're not saved tonight. I want you to understand that time is short. You need to make a decision tonight. And for the rest of us that know that we're going to heaven, are you sharing Christ in your life? Are you sharing with those around you what Jesus Christ has done in your life? Here we look at Paul's life. Paul never stopped, regardless of what was going on around him, never stopped sharing Jesus Christ. We need to be sharing Christ regardless of what happens around us. There's a persistence to Paul's life. Even though these three men, it's not recorded, they accepted Jesus Christ, you know, he was persistent about what he did. When I was a very young child, my mother, for the first year of my school, she decided to homeschool me. She never did that again. She put me into a regular school after that first year. I don't know why exactly. Anyway, that's another story. But I felt that because I was going into school, that my first day of school, I would learn to read. I thought that after my first day of school, I'd be able to read anything I wanted to read. And I remember after that first day of school, I asked my mom, well, can I read now? She's like, no, I only learned the letter A that first day of school, and how to say that and look at that and recognize that. But can I learn to read now? And I remember crying and being heavily disappointed that I couldn't read. You know, it takes time to learn to read. We're teaching Ethan how to read. He's memorized some words. He can read some words. Chloe already knows how to read. Some of us may know how to read better than others, but it takes time and work to know how to read. It takes patience and diligence. It takes years of going to school to be a proficient reader, to be able to read well. In fact, it takes a lot of practice reading by yourself to be able to stand up in front of public and be able to read something out of a book and be able to do that clearly and smoothly. All those things take time. And the same thing is sharing Christ with others. You know, it takes time not only to get comfortable at doing it, maybe we never get fully comfortable in sharing Christ. Not only does it take time getting comfortable or getting used to doing it, but it also takes time for them to accept Jesus Christ. Be persistent about it. Share Christ with everyone. And that's the secret to Paul's success. Many people were changed around Paul because Paul, everywhere he went, shared Christ. Every person that Jesus brought in his life, he shared Christ with that person.